This episode of Behind the Bots is brought to you by Fingertech Robotics, North America's top manufacturer of combat robotics parts. If you're interested in building your first combat robot, check out Fingertech's Viper Kit, which includes everything you need to build a fully functional, competitive Antweight. Fingertech also carries a complete line of wheels, hubs, motors, and other components if you want to build a bot from the ground up. Check them out online at www.fingertechrobotics.com.
From our living rooms, as we practice social distancing, this is Behind the Bots, the podcast that brings you the stories of the builders behind BattleBots. I'm Chris.
I'm Luke.
I'm Lindsay.
And I'm Kyle.
And today on the podcast, our interview with Team Malice.
We'll wrap up the show with this week's installment of Robots Around the World. If you like our show, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, TuneIn, CastBox, Player FM, and Podbean. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Behind the Bots, or check out our website at www.behindthebots.com. If you like what you hear, tell a friend. We really appreciate your support.
Time for this week's Combat Robotics News. I have 9 news items for you today. First up, BattleBots put out a new statement this week saying filming will very likely happen this year as planned, potentially in the late summer or early fall. The organization writes, quote, "We have contingency plans in the works for maximizing social distancing during our shoot, and we will only restart production with the well-being of the bot builders, crew, and audience as the top priority." There's still a lot of things up in the air, most notably the possibility that the show might be taped without a live audience. BattleBots says they'll continue to issue new information as it comes in through their newsletter and social media. It's pretty exciting. We got some new information today.
Yeah, it was kind of a non-statement, but at the same time, they're confirming that Discovery is still behind the show. They still want to make the show. It's still going to happen this year. They're pushing the date back a little bit. You know, originally they were kind of saying summer, but now they're saying maybe fall or summer. My question is, what are the contingencies that they're going to do to keep everybody safe? Are they going to build like individual pit areas out of Lexan so that everybody's in their own little fishbowl, or what's the plan there? What do you think?
Everyone gets like one of those 9-foot plastic ball, like inflatable balls that you can kind of American gladiators around in.
All right. This is actually a very simple solution. So hear me out. So as you know, BattleBots co-creator Trey Rosky, he wears that spaceman suit to go in and put out lithium, battery fires. All right.
Yeah.
They just make 400 of those, give them to every single one of the competitors. You could run BattleBots for like 9 months, you know, like every single day they could be in there. No one would get sick.
No one could also scratch their face or sneeze or anything. It would be terrible.
All right. Every time I see this, you know, every time he goes into the box with that thing on, where did he get that from? Who makes it? How much did it cost? All right, I've only seen one. It's on this show, you know?
That's a valid point. Yeah, I don't know. I'm glad he's wearing it. I mean, lithium is no joke, but yeah, it's a good point.
This All should right. really be BattleBots' opportunity to capitalize on this, because this is only one of the very few sports where you don't have to have like any people in proximity to one another technically.
Right, that's true. That's true. I'm going to make a promise to the listeners. I'm going to make 2 promises. One, we will have Trey on the show. We are going to interview him. And 2, my very first question to Trey will be, where did you get that spaceman suit? All right. That is the Behind the Bots guarantee, okay?
The content people are coming here for.
That's right. Meanwhile, Hypershock is upgrading its self-writing mechanism with help from one of the team's new sponsors, Xometry. As you recall, Hypershock's self-writer did not work during the 2019 season, but Will Bales and team took the bot back to the shop after the competition and got the self-writer to work in time for Robot Ruckus later that year. The team redesigned a new component that will house the arm's motor, and connect to a multi-part hub that should be able to take harder hits. Excellent video this week from Will Bales. Like, he's really getting good at shooting, you know, these YouTube videos.
He did such a good job. I said it when we were doing our little pre-record session. I'll say it now. There is nothing better in the world than Will Bales when he tries, because, man, he does some great stuff.
I can't wait to see it. I want to see, like, these similarly detailed kind of dissections of all of the components inside of the bot. I mean, the bot's looking really beautiful, and it's cool that he was able to weave in this help from the team sponsor. Wisconsin-based Team Waiachi is continuing to slowly release new details about its newest bot, Fusion. This week, they posted a photo of what appears to be a second body with the caption, "Oh no, they are multiplying." This is the first time we've seen the inside of Fusion and what appears to be the incredibly tight space inside to hold the motors, batteries, controls, and all of the other components. Kyle, what did you think when you saw this photo?
I thought, none of the guys on that team have small hands or fingers. This is going to be a real pain.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, okay, where is everything going to go? Like, there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of things that have to go inside of a heavyweight bot that has two weapons, you know? And it seems like it has double the weapons, like half the space of other bots that we've seen. So really interested to see, you know, the bot with the top off and all of the components inside.
That's valid. Like, there's more space inside of Duck.
Yeah.
And there is inside of this thing, and it has two active weapons.
I mean, the interesting thing is, you know, we've talked to builders before who say, one of the mistakes that I made when I was building my Beetle Weight was that I made it too tight inside of the bot, you know, because when you have a very tight kind of size tolerance, you get a big hit and everything kind of jostles inside of the bot. There's just less room for error. But I think if there's any team that can pull it off, it's Team Waiachi. They just have the time in the box. They obviously have the engineering skill to understand why they set it out like this. So yeah, I am cautiously optimistic about Fusion.
What was it that that Blacksmith commented on that thread? They said something like, "Oh, the worst thing you can do is give Team Waiachi more time."
Yeah. Right. Yes, yes. Speaking from experience, no doubt. The team behind Double Jeopardy this week released a new video showing their new and improved cannon capable of shooting a cannonball across the battle box in 1/10 of a second using a nitrogen-charged tank. The new cannon is 3 feet long and weighs 83 pounds and now has 3 shots. So we are looking at Triple Jeopardy. What did you think about this video, Kyle? Like, pretty awesome engineering and behind this huge, deadly potato gun.
Man, I love the gravity feed design. It's so simple. It's exactly what they need. This team always has great ideas for how they're going to improve their cannon, and they just aren't ever able to get all those ideas in time. Once like filming happens. But man, the beauty of it is, so filming was already supposed to have started, right? And now they're rocking and rolling with a completed cannon design. I can't wait until we see videos of them testing this thing and firing it into giant hay bales into their backyard.
It's not safe. If I was their next door neighbor, I would be calling the cops. Like, if I saw that cannon coming out to the backyard.
Do you think that they actually have to, like, go around to their neighbors and be like, "Hey, listen, this is what I'm doing. Please don't call the cops. I'm not, like, you know, injuring anything. Okay, cool, bye." Like, do you think that they have to kind of, you know, go down the block and alert people?
Well, it's pneumatic. I can't imagine it's like the same. It's not as loud as if it was like a gunpowder cannon, you know. So, like, they're probably not making anything more than what it would sound like if you hit something with a hammer rather loudly. Okay. You know, I'll bet it's more like a thud than a bang. But yeah, you're right. I mean, it's super dangerous. They're launching a giant piece of metal. 250 miles per hour across their backyard.
Lindsay, I've actually given thought to this question in the past. Like every time I see a BattleBots competitor posting a video of them driving their bot around in their like front yard, I always think to myself, what is the people who live next door, what are they talking about over dinner? Yeah. Like, I cannot believe those people. They are, I think over there, they might be building a BattleBot, honey. You know, like.
Because like, I imagine you can, you know, test like a hammer in your driveway if you have a hammer bot. Like, yeah. So, you know, now it's out on display. Like, how do you explain that? Or I guess you just say, hey, look, I'm on BattleBots. And then immediately you're either like the coolest person on the block or everybody stays away from you because they don't want to face the ire of your hammer. If they like, you know, if some of the leaves from their lawn like blow onto your lawn.
I would love to live next to a BattleBots builder. Like, I just think they'd be the most interesting person on the block. Like, just, you know, watching them hammering away at their handmade forge, you know, like in their garage. Like,
you already live next to a congressman, so you can like have a congressman on one end and then a BattleBots competitor on the other.
That's true. I do live next door to my my local congressman. You know, I will say, like, separately, the thing that I love about BattleBots so much is that when I watch videos from builders, by the time that the video ends, I'm convinced that that bot's going to win, like, go and win the entire competition. You know, like, I'm looking at their gigantic potato gun, and I'm thinking to myself, that is actually a really good idea. Like, I want to see it. I want to see it, like, really working great, you know, because if you're going to get hit by a 3-pound slug, like, you know, it's going to do something to your blade, you know? So yeah, hopefully 2020 is the year where we get to see it really, really come to fruition. Speaking of videos, we got our first test drive video this week from the heavyweight grappler bot Gamma 9. The bot, made by longtime roboteer Curtis Nemeth, appeared on the 2018 season of BattleBots, where it went 0-2. The team is returning to the competition this year with a scooping arm. Curtis is an OG BattleBots competitor, first appearing at the competition in 1995 with Namreco 2000, which was later followed by Gammatron, Gammaside, and Gamma 9. Fun fact, Gammatron is a reference to the 90s indie rock band Servotron, whose members dressed up like robots and sang songs about being robots. I got to listen to their music today. Highly recommend if you're looking for something new. Kyle, did you get a chance to check out Gamma 9?
Yes, I think it's awesome. It makes me think of the 1960s Batman TV show Batmobile with those cool wings on the back. Yeah. And it's like a wonderful looking bot for 1999, like the design sensibilities on this thing, you know, it's a rectangular shape. It's got the big old lifter on it. I think it's awesome. This is it's an old school battle bot by an old school builder, and I'm really excited to see it come play.
And we know that Gamma 6 is terrified of Gamma 7.
Why is Gamma 6 afraid of Gamma 7?
Because 7 ain't 9.
I knew that car wreck was coming, and I couldn't look away.
The team behind the German multibot Jaeger is posting build diary photos of their second bot, an undercutter that remains unnamed. The team previously released drive video of their unnamed overhead saw bot. It's still unknown what the third multibot will be, but my money is on a vertical disc spinner. Team captain Rolf Schneider is a regular fixture on the local circuit in Europe and has competed on both seasons of BuggleBots.
With a scary little vertical spinner known as Phoenix.
Phoenix. And also competed on season one of BuggleBots with Angst, is that right?
That's correct. Yeah, the really, really crazy axe bot.
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, it seems like the combat robotics scene in Germany is still growing, and Rolf is very much at the center of that, going to pretty much every single event that they hold in Germany, plus lots of events across Europe. Team Huge is jumping into the fight against COVID-19 by using their 3D printer to build ear keepers for medical professionals in their community. Ear keepers fit around the back of your head and hold the mask's elastic straps away from the person's ears, making wearing a mask for long periods of time more comfortable. The team built 55 ear keepers and donated them to their local hospital. The team behind the electric blue overhead sawbot Scorpios is picking up a new sponsor, Dunkin' Yo-Yos. Team captain Zach Lytle is a competitive yo-yo thrower who holds a patent for a new type of magnetic yo-yo, which he licensed to Dunkin' as the Dunkin' Magnitude. So it's kind of cool. Like, he built this yo-yo, licensed it, and now they sold a bunch of them, and they are putting that money back into the team. That's really, really awesome of Dunkin'.
I don't know if it's just like leftover from my childhood, but maybe I think of Dunkin' as a bigger company than they actually are. Like, it feels strange that they're just sponsoring a BattleBot team instead of just all of BattleBots. You know what I mean?
I mean, is there like a lot of money in yo-yos? Like, is this a $1 billion corporation? Like,
I don't know. Maybe it's because they always had commercials on during Saturday morning cartoons when I was a kid. I've always thought of them as like a really big company. But now as an adult, now that I'm thinking about it, yeah, they're probably just a yo-yo company.
Yeah.
You should try to get sponsored by Hostess Yo-Yos now.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Much more delicious of a sponsor.
And finally, this week's must-watch video comes from Shatter Captain Adam Wrigley, who took fans on a behind-the-scenes tour of his basement, where he stores pieces of his heavyweight hammerbot and lots of robot memorabilia. His most prized possession, a BattleBots winner's chip, which the team earned on the 2019 season of the show. Adam put the chip inside of this huge, ornate, golden picture frame that I absolutely love. All that said, you know, you can check out all of the memorabilia on this video, and it's all really great. But for me, the best part of the video was all of the non-robot stuff that he's got in his basement, which includes a perfect scale model replica of the jetpack from The Rocketeer. Highly recommend the video. Definitely go and check that out. And that's it for this week's news.
After the break, our interview with Team Malice.
This week on the podcast, we have 6 very special guests from Team Malice. First up, Team Captain Bunny Soriel, a longtime roboteer returning for her 4th season of BattleBots, having previously competed with Rex and Shatter. She got her start back in 2002 and remains one of the most recognizable competitors on the local circuit, traveling across the country and across the globe to fight BattleBots. We've also got the 3 Davids, David Thou, David Rush and David Small, and Isaac Mailer and Jeff Waters. This is a dream team of combat robotics competitors with decades of combined experience in the box. Their bot is Malice, a brand new heavyweight that features a 55-pound horizontal drumette. It's an interesting design that's been tested at lower weight classes with a lot of success. We're really looking forward to learning more about the team and their bot on the show today. So welcome to the show, Team Malice.
Hi.
Hey.
Hello.
Hello.
Howdy, howdy.
We are so excited that you could join us. Malice is one of the like most outstanding rookie bots this season. And your build diaries and your videos have just been excellent. I think there's a lot of people who are really, really excited about seeing your bot compete on BattleBots this year. And we are really stoked to have you on the show. I want to start with a couple questions for David Rush. So, David, I'd love to learn more about the team and how it was formed. I guess first off, can you kind of go through the members of the team and what your roles are?
Yeah. So first and foremost, we have Bunny, which is our team captain. She keeps everything together, everything flowing. We have David Lau, he's our weapons operator. We have me, David Rush, and I am the driver. Then we have Isaac Mailers, our CAD expert. Jeff Waters. Jeff, what do you do again?
I have no idea what I do.
He's our meme engineer.
And then we have David Small, one of my close friends, and he's our moral support.
Aww. And oh. You know, general labor.
What's the team's origin story? Like, how long ago was it that you started talking and thinking about possibly forming a BattleBots team?
So this actually started off a couple of years ago. So David Lau and I, we were at one of the Bot Bash tournaments, and he and I were pitted next to each other, and we just got talking. I think David, if I'm not mistaken, I think you said that you just wanted to, or you were just exploring ideas like, hey, maybe we should build a heavyweight, and I think you said that heavyweight Unknown Avenger was still a few years off. So he said, hey, what if we just do one of your designs, one of your horizontal drum robots? And so it kind of just took off from there.
So David, what's the process like to get started? So like, do you start by raising money? Do you start by putting together a design, putting together the team roster? Like how did it go from this early conversation in the pits to where we are today?
Initially, I talked to David Rush and I just said, hey, you want to build a heavyweight version of your robot? And you said you could give it a go with the CAD, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I realized pretty early on that it was definitely a taller order than just me alone, or just me and you would be able to take on.
Yeah, that's true. And then for applying for BattleBots, I thought having three Davids would just be really funny. So one way we would get in. But we tried to find other people to do our CAD, but eventually found Isaac, which was a huge lifesaver. And that's really what was our biggest hurdle we had to first get to past.
Rush, this brings us to our first listener question from a fan named Andrew, age 6. And so he said, who is driving? He has a 3-part question. First up, who is driving Malice?
Well, I, David Rush, I am the designated driver for Malice.
Andrew has a follow-up question. Why did you choose this design?
So we went with this design because I've been competing with this particular design in the lower weight classes, namely the ant weight and beetle weight classes, and I've just got a lot of experience with how the construction of that particular weapon, how to drive it, etc. I've been spending a few years really polishing it and just getting all the small details dialed in.
Yeah. Maybe this is a good spot to pause and ask you, Rush, like, can you describe Malice and describe what makes Malice unique?
Yeah, so Malice uses a horizontal drum, or at least that's what we're calling it. And what really makes that unique is most horizontal discs are usually larger diameter and relatively thin thickness. We're going the other way around. We're doing smaller diameter and much larger thickness. So that allows the weapon to hit like a larger chunk of the opponent. In theory, when it hits more of a larger area of the opponent, it will then transfer a larger percentage of energy to them.
Final question from Andrew, age 6. What kind of weapon motor does Malice use?
Yeah, Malice is using a Moto Energy 0909 motor. So it's basically an E-Tech.
Cool. Very cool. And Rush, I had one last question. So I know that you've competed with this horizontal drum design in the past at smaller weight classes. Can you talk to us about the original impetus behind the design? Like how did you dream up this design initially?
All right. So it actually started at the very beginning when I was just getting into combat robotics. As a new builder, sometimes a lot of us want to, make our mark and do something really, really unique. And so I was writing down all kinds of unique weapons to possibly pursue. It ranged from I think at one point I had like a full body spinner flipper or something like that. It just a bunch of crazy ideas. And so, but one of them that I just kept coming back to was a horizontal drum. And at my first event, I even brought the idea up to Whiplash driver Matt Vasquez, And I think he was kind of giving me he was kind of pointing out some, you know, possible flaws with that weapon. And so I took his opinion and I started to kind of work around that. I said, okay, he pointed out this weakness here. So what if I design it so it just gets around all that? So I went from like a tall, horizontal drum to a much shorter but still pretty fat weapon. And I said, all right, let's just build this thing. Let's just see what happens. And so I finally competed with it. I built it and competed at Motorama, I think 2017. And it actually didn't do too bad. And it was, and it went, you know, and just that whole, I started to realize that there might actually be something to this style of weapon.
Yeah. I'd love to transition over to Isaac and kind of like ask about some of the physics behind the weapon, because I know you've done some of the CAD for the heavyweight. So Isaac, you know, like I imagine that the classic advice that you get when you tell someone that you're going to build a heavyweight horizontal drum is, you know, build it vertical, you know, like, because every time you make contacts, you know, your bot gets planted into the ground, that, you know, that the physics in the box mean that your bot is going to get thrown a lot if it's horizontal. You know, can you kind of talk through the physics, you know, of the bot's design and what you're expecting to see when you bring it to BattleBots?
Yeah, certainly. So kind of one of the things that I like about horizontals is if you have a vertical drum, there's a limit to how much weapon power you can put into it before the gyroscopic forces are just totally unmanageable. If you have a horizontal robot, you can have more focus on the weapon before the driving just becomes totally terrible. So I think our hope is that yes, if we hit something, it's going to go flying everywhere. But the maneuverability of the robot should be fairly good before the hit. So we're hoping that that driving quality, where it's good at driving, is able to enable us to outdrive the opponent and hopefully kind of pick our hits and fight a more strategic fight.
Yeah. That's interesting. So you are anticipating the bot will get thrown, you know, when it makes contact, or that, you know, you've overcome that. Maybe not
It'll certainly get thrown when it makes contact. But hopefully we'll be able to pick the contact pretty well. I think our goal is to hit the sweet spot where even if the opponent has like a wedge, we're able to maneuver successfully to overcome that.
Yeah. When I think of successful horizontal designs, you know, I think of like Rotator or Tombstone, of course, and it feels like reliability is a really big factor with those bots. I mean, they're just little tanks that just keep going and going and going, even though they're getting these huge shocks inside of the bot, you know. Is that really going to be the key, you know, for Malice, like being able to get thrown, but being able to continue to operate?
Yeah, I mean, reliability is always key. If you have a weakness, it'll get found in the box.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to ask a couple of questions of David Lau. David is going to be Malice's weapon operator this season. I'm curious to kind of like learning more about the job of a weapon operator. You know, can you talk through what your responsibilities are going to be at the BattleBots during the competition?
Yeah, sure. Well, one thing, we kind of split the drive and the weapon separately, so there's two different controllers. And for once, if the weapon dies, you can still drive. So that's one reason why we split it. But another reason we found is, if you're driving and then you're using the weapon at the same time, sometimes if you focus on one, the other part will be worse. So if you're just focusing on the weapon, then your drive will be worse and you might not be maneuvering very well. So the reason why we had me as the weapon driver. Obviously, I think that we would just turn it on all the time, but you still need to decelerate sometimes. If it's about to get slammed into the wall, there's no point in accelerating a weapon into the wall. So right. stuff like that. And if we're on the wedge or hitting the wedge, this is really accelerating it even harder onto a wedge isn't really going to be very useful. So there's really certain times where I need to focus on when to accelerate it or when to decelerate it. And that allows rush to drive and just focus on drive only.
Yeah. I imagine that one of the challenges for Malice is that when the weapon is up to full speed and it's driving around, the physics of it are different than if you have the weapon safe and you're driving around inside of a garage or something like that. You know, like I'm assuming that you haven't been able to spin it up to full speed and drive it around an obstacle course or anything like that. You know, like has all of the practice so far been theoretical, you know, or are you practicing with smaller versions of Malice, you know, to kind of understand the drive and the physics of the weapon?
Yeah. So, yeah, there's definitely, there are definitely some effects that, you know, that come with driving while the weapon's on. But for one major positive thing is the bot gets more stable, because with gyroscopic force going on, going parallel with the floor, it's, you know, it helps keep it from tilting down or up, and it's, in a way, it makes it easier to drive. But where you really find a difference in driving is when the weapon is accelerating or decelerating, because that's when you start to encounter a torque reaction. And so sometimes when the weapon's spinning up, the robot will start to turn left on its own. So it's a lot of the skill behind driving Malice will be, you know, knowing when that's coming and knowing how to compensate for like that torque reaction.
Yeah. Isaac, I had a couple of questions, additional questions for you, Isaac. I'd love to learn more about the build process. So can you talk us through like the build process? What's Malice made of? What types of decisions did you and the team make during the design and build process for the bot?
Yeah, certainly. So it's pretty standard engineering practice where you need to be able to predict things before you execute. So you need to be able to predict what's going to be machinable, how much are things going to cost, how much stress can a certain part take, right? So we did a variety of analysis through the CAD phase, where we would do some CAD and some design, and then we would ask a machine shop for a quote on this part and try and estimate the total cost. And I would do some FEA to try and estimate the strength. And then we did that several iterations to try and get the cost down as low as possible, try and get the strength up as high as possible, try and get the shape of it to have the most iconic shape possible, right? It's very much like an iterative process to arrive at a very good final product. Nobody can design anything just cold turkey from scratch, perfect the first time. So it's definitely a lot of iteration through that process.
Is it one of those like classic engineering triangles where, you know, you can choose speed, quality, or budget? You know, like you can choose two, but can't have the third one.
Yeah, there's always a little bit of that. I think the design guidelines are open enough that if you spend enough time, if you have enough time, you really are not hindered by something like that, where you're having to make trade-offs, decisions about trade-offs. But certainly with the low build season that we thought we had, and also just trying to keep the robot electrically very simple, we made a couple of kind of trade-off decisions like that, for sure. Yeah.
I understand you helped out a lot with the CAD. So I'd love to understand, you know, when you're scaling up a design or scaling up a concept, you know, is it, what's the process like for taking a successful insect weight and blowing it up to a heavyweight?
Yeah, I think there's different materials available. So probably the biggest change from the insect weight is the construction methods. in insects, in antwits in particular, you're pretty much free to just 3D print everything. So you just design your whole robot in one piece and then throw it on the printer and it comes out one solid chunk of plastic. That's great. For a robot as large as Malice, we really did not have the opportunity to just machine it out of a solid billet. That would be prohibitively expensive and also probably not as competitive as we want. There are certain parts of the robot that we wanted to be stronger, so they're made out of steel, and then other parts of the robot that we wanted to absorb more shock and maybe be like a crumple zone in the car, so we made those out of UHMW plastic. So a lot of the scaling it up was trying to figure out which materials would work and which material choices had to change.
That's really cool. Bunny, I'm interested in hearing from you about the makeup of the team. You know, it seems to me that this is like a real dream team of competitors, because so many of you compete on the local circuit all over the place. You know, like just crisscrossing the country, like kind of showing up at the top events, like everywhere. Is that like a fair characterization of the team's experience?
Oh, absolutely. We have just the most amazing people on this team, and they just are so in love with this sport, and they bring such energy and creativity into the sport. You should see some of Jeff's builds. They're just absolutely crazy and insane, and he comes up with the best ideas. And, you know, my favorite robots are Flippers, and David Small is the best pneumatics person in the whole sport. And it's true. And, you know, Isaac, he just hit the way he just measures everything with precision and perfection. It's just inspiring. And, you know, Lau and Rush, they're the best drivers you can find. You just can't find better drivers than those two. And they just work so hard. And everyone here loves the sport with their whole heart.
Yeah. It's kind of cool, because when you look at the roster of rookie teams, quote unquote rookie teams, you know, there are some that are like really on the very start of their career in combat robotics. You know, like some people who are building a heavyweight first, they've never built an insect weight.
My French. Oh gosh, I love Philippe, and it's his first heavyweight, and it just seems so crazy.
Yeah. And then there's other teams that are on the other side where it's like, I've competed in China. I've competed at other heavyweight events. Maybe I'm part of the three continent club, and this is my third continent. You know, I'm finally coming to BattleBots. So like rookies, even though it's a first time bot, really Malice brings with it a lot of experience. And I think that makes the team really, really exciting.
I agree.
First place wins for a lot of the team members here on the call.
Absolutely, absolutely. David has 30, not quite, but he has quite a listing of them. And Rush has 10, and Isaac has 10, and everyone here has just so many wins, and it's just so impressive. They're just such a great group of guys.
That's really cool.
So, listener questions. We've got a bunch of listeners, and we try our best to give all of them their voice on the show. So. We'll start with listener questions for Bunny. So, first listener question for you. Nelly the Elliebot tactician, Rara Granger, asks, as the Dons of Swag, what is the most niche or weird merchandise item you have conceived so far?
So far, I think the most niche thing I built was the foam thrower. I get so many messages of people telling me how much they've been using it during this quarantine, just having fun throwing the foam thrower around the house or outside. You know, a lot of people have roommates that they can just play with all day long. And my friend T, she's like, it's the best investment I've ever spent was getting this foam thrower, because we use it every day.
The foam thrower is awesome, because it's exactly this, like a replica basically of your weapon. So it's a really effective thrower too. It seems to have a really good spin to it.
It really does. It flies so smoothly. These boys were playing with it when they were supposed to be building the robot.
We were on break. It was only about 2 hours of it.
And they were playing horseshoe with it on the actual, you know, where we have our weapon shaft. They would play horseshoe and try to toss it onto the weapon shaft.
We were trying to get David Small to catch it in his mouth.
If only we had more time.
All right, so related question from Pardon My French Captain Philippe, who wants to know what motivated the decision of having 60% of the build budget dedicated to merchandise, winky face emoji.
Actually, all of the merchandise purchases up until this point have only been about 1% to 2% of the budget of the entire robot. These robots cost a lot of money. Yeah. When I started in robots, it was in the Robot Fighting League era. Robots were for everyone. Like, there was a ton of merch, and I still have, to this day, my original RFL messenger bag and hoodie. We as a community, when I first started, believed that robots were here to bring everyone's interest into engineering just right up in their face, and that these robots should be accessible, even for someone just walking in off the street. We kind of priced our merchandise with that in mind. Our hats are like $10 cheaper than other teams, and our shirts are $5 to $10 cheaper. And I think the more merchandise we can get into our fans' hands, the more people we can reach and bring interest into this sport, and the more lives we can change for how amazing this community is.
Oh my gosh, I love that answer. That's awesome. So Rara has a follow-up question for Bunny. When are you launching the Malice yacht?
I have the Malice boat. I have it out in my driveway right now. It's called Malice Mischief.
I love it. And then final question in this like series of Bunny questions. So we have a question for Bunny from former teammates at Bots FC asked, who is your favorite member of Bots FC? Now, they did not specify if it was current member or past member, so keep that in mind when you're answering.
I can't choose. Adam is one of the best engineers I've ever met in my whole life. I just admire him so much. And Eric, he just is so fabulous and wonderful. And Mary and Matt, like, I love Matt. We just were hanging out at Motor. I can't choose. I can't. And Paul, I was the one who brought Paul to Bots FC. You can't make me choose between my former teammates. I just love everyone equally. I just can't.
That was a very diplomatic answer. I appreciate that. So the last thing we have for you is a note from Scorpios weapons operator Diana Tarleson, who writes, Bunny, I remember seeing you at my first Robo Games and saying, hey, I want to be like her. She's hanging out with the cool kids. Not a question, just a fact. Bunny is the best and a big reason I'm in the sport. Heart emoji.
I love Diana so much. She's like, oh my gosh, she's one of our biggest. She's the only other person that's not on the team that has all of our swag. Every time I make something, I put one aside for her.
That's Diana, awesome.
She's wonderful. And she's my other bunny. Like, you know, we're both bunnies. So we both, like, we just get along so well. And I love her so much. She's the inspiring one. You know, she just put together this whole reading of Be for BattleBots, you know, the child's book. For all the, you know, kids in quarantine, she's so inspiring and she's so humble. It's just so hard to imagine. Ugh, I can't.
Oh, and I forgot, she does have a follow-up question, which is also, how did you get all of the Davids?
I'm going to give that question to David Lau, because he's actually the one who got all the Davids together. And I feel like the Triforce is just drawn to one another.
David, did you want to answer that question?
Answer that? Oh. I don't know. How did we form up? We just kept going to all these competitions and meeting up, and we were just pitted next to each other, and we're like, let's just form up to make the Triforce.
I guess that makes me Link.
Should we explain the Triforce?
Yes. David Small is our courage piece. David Rush is our power piece, and David Lau is our knowledge piece. David Small is the courage, because it takes a ton of courage to get into the arena with a flipper. yes, exactly. And David Rush is our power piece, because have you seen his robots? And then David Lau is the wisdom, because everything is just his brilliance. Everything about this team is his brilliance and his intelligence.
I love it. All right, so next questions are for Jeff Waters. So Jeff, I feel like I've seen you at a million different local events. I saw you at Motorama. I saw you at Franklin Institute. You're always online competing at some event somewhere. My children, just as a side note, absolutely love Wumbo. It's one of their favorite robots overall. So I wanted to ask you to just tell us a little bit about some of the robots that you build. Maybe break down just three of them, because as Bunny said earlier, you build some crazy things, and I think it would be fun for you to describe them to our listeners.
See, I'm trying to pick what three I like. So many. I'll probably focus on my three most successful ones. So obviously, I'll start with Wumbo. Wumbo is actually what got me into the sport. Like, I built a few robots before that never made it to an event. One was Pinball Wizard. That was built, like, 2014. And keep in mind, I didn't first compete till 2018, so it's been a while. I've built Wumbo off of basically on Chump Posting. We posted something about what if huge was sideways. And I found out, like, it was 10 days after that post, there was an event. So I figured, oh, I have 10 days to build this shitty robot. And I took it there. It failed spectacularly. But 2 months later, I took it to a Colorado event?
Steamfest?
Steamfest. I took it to Steamfest, and somehow it won. And after that, it hasn't seen the same success. Second, we'll talk about a Firmly Grasp It. Firmly Grasp It was like a concept I had for a plastic ant saw blaze. So it uses the friction of the cutting disc to melt through other plastic ants. And because it's moving so fast, itself cools so it doesn't melt itself.
That's cool.
It worked relatively well, except for all the times it didn't. Most of the time would be, if it slows down too much, I will fuse my blade to the opponent and we'll get stuck. And we had to get separated by cutting the blade off.
All right, that's a little drawback.
Yeah, then Off-Track's my most recent build, and it's kind of what's been taking over my life. It's had relative success. It went mid-pack at Motorama. It did decent, had positive record at Texas and a positive record at Arizona. So it's actually my most successful robot, even though it's my most complex.
It's a really cool robot. I enjoyed watching your kind of build diaries on that. And one of the things you're kind of best known for in that community is how quickly you're able to put these bots together and have them, you know, stay together in the box and do really well.
Yeah, well, yeah. Was it like a few days ago, I was in a group chat and they told me I have 20 minutes to build a fairy. 15 minutes later, I had a saw blade fairy that could have gone on the printer that moment.
So we have a listener question for you from Victor Dyson, who asks, Off-Track as a Malice minibot? ?
I would love to, but we need to put all the weight into the robot itself. And right. Any weight that we don't have in Malice is weight that an opponent's going to have on us.
Right. Absolutely. And you put a lot of work into Off-Track. It would be really sad to see it go in there against...
If I was to put anything in there, I'd put Wumbo in there.
And Wumbo might actually survive. All right, so the next couple of questions that I have are for David Small. So, David, we have a question for you from Sawblaze Captain Jameson Go, who asks, who is the number one Beetleweight robot? And I'm going to add a caveat to that. You are not allowed to look at bot rank.
Oh no!
Well, no bot rank. That rules out Hailstorm or whatever.
But, rank? There's like four.
It's definitely Silent Storm.
Storm. Yeah, like the best are like potatoes. It's better when they're loaded. So, when it comes to beetles, I like either Innovation or engineering. So something like silence or margin of safety, you know, those are two that really push the boundaries of how power can be shoved into a beetle. And the creative, it's like Rickety Cricket, especially that try something completely different, and they work, and they work really well for favorite types of beetles. I'm not going to pick one, so something like that is what I go for.
I don't like Rickety Cricket because it doesn't like my arena.
My arena either, but I love the road.
Oh. All right, we have a listener question from one of Bunny's close friends, T, who asks, David Small, have you finished your beetle weight? If not, because we know you have not, when do you plan to?
Okay, I have exactly zero beetles and several completed beetles. I mean, I guess Kelpie version 3 is in the work now. I guess I haven't put a lot of progress because a lot of events to go to right now, but it'll definitely happen eventually. So yeah, it's a solid eventually for your ETA.
Solid eventually. Oh, I like it. All right, so David Rush, we have three questions for David Rush from Claw Viper Captain Kevin Milcheski. Is that how you say his name? Milcheski?
Milzuski, I think.
Milzuski. Yeah.
I think Milzuski.
Milzuski, I like. All right, so we have three questions from Kevin Milzuski, who I just learned grew up in the Hudson Valley, which is cool.
You want to know another fun fact? I made his logo.
Oh, really?
I did.
That's awesome. So, did you have a drive-off to see who gets to drive Malice?
Surprisingly, no. I wasn't really sure from the from the very beginning. I wasn't sure who's gonna drive, but I think they just I just became appointed the driver because one, I know all the ins and outs of this particular style of robot, and I think that some of the other people, I don't know if they want the responsibility of screwing up when they drive and they get wrecked, if they get anything wrecked really bad. So I think I was just designated that, without any choice in the matter.
So what's the hardest part of driving the smaller versions of Malice?
So what's interesting about driving the smaller versions is that, like Isaac mentioned earlier on, with these small robots, you can 3D print a lot of stuff, and it's one of the reasons why you're able to get away with such insane weapons at the smaller level, because you can just 3D print the rest of it. And so in the smaller versions, Odium and Animus, so probably like most of those builds are actually made of plastic. So that means most of the weapon weight is way up front, and the wheels are usually as close as they can be to the front, but usually they're set back pretty far. So the front area of the bot is usually so heavy that when the robot turns, it just tends to just swing around, and it's really easy to overturn, and so it's always really unpredictable to drive the smaller ones.
All right, and David Small, I have one more question for you. How many Davids is too many Davids?
There's no such thing as too many Davids. There's only not enough Davids. It is a slow and steady conquest, but we will conquer all, and we will not rest until all have been converted.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God, David.
Davids are the opposite of Highlanders.
Davids are the opposite of Highlanders. Oh, that's good. All right, so David Law, we have some questions for you.
Wow.
I'm sorry, I apologize. I don't know why I read it that way. David Lau, I have some questions for you.
Yes.
Brent has a question. Are you buying a Cybertruck?
It's a weird
Brent
question.
Brent is my baby brother. Just so you know, Brent is my baby brother.
Short answer, I don't know, but I have a reservation for one.
Fair enough. That's the first step, I guess, right? All right, our next question comes from Callan, who asks, what's the most fun part of BattleBots? In contrast, what is the most difficult?
the most fun is hanging out with the team and all the other teams after or during the competition. Most difficult? Rebuilding the robot after it gets completely wrecked.
Yes. Oh my gosh, yes.
Well, that makes sense. All right, our next question for you is from Shay, who asks, what would you say is the most underrated item in a builder's toolkit or something new builders might not realize would be really helpful at the competition?
For tools, when I bought my Arbor Press, I thought it was amazing. And then I bought the hydraulic press, and I'm just like, this is way better. The presses are just amazing because you like, your frame gets warped and then you just press it out instead of remaking it. It's just so much, cost is so much less because of it. So I would say get an Arbor press first. And then if you have the money and the space, get a hydraulic press.
That makes sense. Now, is there something not tool related that's really important to bring to the competition, like folding chairs, a type of snack that you like?
Teammates.
Aw, I like that answer.
Let's stick with teammates.
All right, so I have a couple of questions kind of for the whole team now. So Shay has a couple of follow-up questions. First, if all team members in Saked Wake Bots were to form a cheerleading pyramid, who would be the point?
I'd say Gimli would be the point.
Gimli sounds
small. Yeah.
But how are we going to
say I think it should be the banana. I think it should be Banana Avenger. Avenger.
Or maybe Banana Odium. Avenger.
It would be Odium, actually, because it's based on Odium.
No, I wouldn't be at the bottom because, you know, wheels come off so easily. It's a good base.
I have a feeling like 90% of the pyramid would just be my robots.
Just by sheer number.
All right, so our next question is kind of specifically for David Small. Where would you place Kelpie in that pyramid for maximum disruptive potential?
Okay. Question before that. Was that only insects or are the featherweights included?
Oh, sorry. It was only insect bots.
Only insects. Okay. I was gonna suggest like whale sloth to flex on Kelpie's flipping power, but in that case, I'm gonna have to go just in the middle so I can get the most destructive explosive force upward as possible.
Dead center, second row up, ready to go. I get it.
No, at the bottom. I'm lifting everybody with that thing.
It's not, well, Kelpie, you know, has how much pounds?
600-ish pounds of force behind it.
So Shay has a question for Isaac. Who would DBSCs be best paired with on Dancing with the Stars?
Yeah. I don't know if Shay knows this about me, but I actually did do competitive dance in college and have a favorite dancer. So it's Fiction, I guess. FIK-SHUN. It's a hip-hop breakdance dancer.
That's amazing that you have such a specific answer to that question.
You should see the videos of this guy. Isaac sent me one right before we got on this chat. He's amazing. And he wears a cat shirt.
You can't complain about that. All right, and final question from Shay is for David Rush. What would you estimate is Malice's towing capacity?
Okay, I actually know this answer. So so a couple months ago, when we all got together and we went to David Lau's house and we finished off the build for Malice. So we did some driving afterwards, and we thought, hey, what happens if couldn't we easily tow someone right behind the bot? And so, and I don't encourage this kind of behavior, but here's what we do.
I very much said no.
Yeah, but Bunny left by that point, so I didn't really care. So. Jeff Waters just hung on to the back of Malice while I drove it, very carefully, and it was just fine. Just carrying you know, one Jeff Waters. So I believe it'll probably max out at 1.5 Jeff Waters.
All right. So listener Craig has a very good question for Isaac and Jeff. Are you planning on changing your names to David for the competition? Will this be a legal name change?
I think everyone's an honorary David.
Fair. And we have an open question for the group from BattleBots Roboteer Andrew Bergraff, who will be competing this season with a new bot called Exchange, asking a classic interview question popularized by our friends Brian and Cam over at Breaking Bots. Is a hot dog a sandwich? And follow-up question, is cereal with milk soup?
I'm going to go with yes on both those.
We got a yes, okay.
I think David Small is the best person to answer this question as our resident drama starter.
Can you have soup? Is that a, I mean, are cold soups a common thing?
Cold soups have, I mean, cucumber soup is
absolutely.
A cold soup.
Okay, okay.
Cold chowder is a thing.
I think depending on how big the bread is, a hot dog is more like a Hot Pocket.
Can I Google soup?
I think so.
Don't worry, we'll clear out your browsing history before you die.
Okay, so
just don't buy clothes there.
There's, if you go with the first definition, you know, it says pretty much anything, but then it says in stock or water, and I wouldn't consider milk stock.
It's absolutely stock.
What kind of stock is it? Oh, I don't know if that's appropriate milk for this stock. Podcast.
Actually, yeah, by that definition, I think you're right. Officially, cereal is not a soup. But what about a hot dog? Is it a sandwich?
It's a vertical sandwich. You know, like we make horizontal drums, we can eat our horizontal sandwiches.
It's a steamed sausage sandwich.
That's correct.
Fair enough. I will agree with all that answer. Okay, thank you guys for talking with us. Bunny, Jeff, Isaac, David, and of course David. We can't wait to see Malice in the Battle Box soon. You guys have been wonderful sitting through this interview with us. We really appreciate it. So thank you so much for coming on the show.
Oh, thanks for having
thank
us.
Thank you for having
thank
us.
You.
Thank you.
After the break, we'll return with this week's installment of Robots Around the World.
Welcome back from the break. Time for Robots Around the World. This week, we're highlighting a company from Japan called Connected Robotics. When I heard the name, I thought maybe they made like auto home stuff, like connecting your thermostat to your phone or something like that. But no, they make something way cooler. The bot that we're going to talk about today is called the OctoChef. And the OctoChef is specifically designed to make a food item called takoyaki. So the OctoChef uses a robotic arm and a camera to make perfect octopus balls, a popular street food across Japan. Imagine it's like a little bit smaller than a golf ball, and it's batter and it's octopus and maybe like little vegetables here and there. The OctoChef can make 48 takoyaki at a time, first by pouring oil into the little like half ball molds. And then they follow it with batter and then the octopus pieces. And the OctoChef turns the individual takoyaki over, like a few times over, all in a row, and uses image recognition to figure out whether each takoyaki is perfect or it needs to be thrown out, if it needs more browning, like whatever the case may be. And so that's what it does. Shoots out oil, it shoots out batter, and then it changes its little extension, and then it like moves the takoyaki around to make sure it gets browned on all sides and becomes a perfect ball, which is wild that this one food item warrants its very own highly specialized, you know, image recognition robot. It is mind-blowing. Unclear how much this robot costs if you were thinking of having one in your own kitchen. Apparently they're pretty tight-lipped about you know, how much it costs, but it was wild. It kind of reminded me of GLaDOS from Portal, except probably a lot less funny than she was. But yeah, this was a very exciting internet find.
Lindsay, you know how they do these stories where they say, like, how did the Mega Millions winner, like, how did they spend $380 million? Like, that would be me, because if I won the lottery, I would buy like 8 Octo Chefs and just like set them up in my kitchen. Like, I'd be eating takoyaki all day, every day, and every night.
Can you imagine a better robot to be paired with, you know, during this quarantine time when you just don't feel like cooking anymore and you don't want to get delivery or takeout? Like, you just fire up the Octo Chef.
All right. Okay. Well, here's the messed up thing, because Octo Chef has to be constantly supplied with batter and octopus.
What, do you load a live octopus into it?
That'd be really dark, like if it was actually processing the octopus.
So I understand that in lieu of a cash payment for the Octo Chef, you can actually pay in tickles.
What?
Yeah. Yep. You can pay in tickles. I think they're looking for exactly 10 tickles. That's tentacles.
Oh my God. Oh, Chris. Chris.
That's what I've been living with all throughout this quarantine. So I'm glad that the audience at home gets a little taste of it.
Oh, I love it.
But yeah, that is the curious thing about this robot, is that it's still like very labor intensive for the person. It's not like the robot you have to change its like attachments, either to be like the oil like thing or the dough thing or the like spike to turn it. You have to fill the individual molds. Like, you know, it's still kind of labor intensive. I don't fully understand necessarily what the point of the robot is as a whole.
Now question. So Connected Robotics, they make other food robots. They make something called the Hot Snack Robot. I really want to learn more about that. But they also make Lorraine, the robot that makes breakfast. Are we going to do like a two-part series of robots around the world? Are we going to be looking at Lorraine like next week?
I think we should go through every single product from Connected Robotics, because I mean, this is like a huge team. They're a startup in Japan. They have a ton of young designers and engineers working for them. And I am fascinated. I mean, this is Japan's shining moment right here.
More food robots. I totally agree.
I'm reading on their website right now that the Octo Chef is actually also, it's a home defense robot.
Oh God, get out of here with your 10 tickles, Chris.
No. Apparently, so the Octo Chef is well armed.
Oh God. Help me.
That's about it for us today. We'll be back in your feed next Wednesday with another mystery guest. See you then, folks.
Bye.
Do you guys know why the octopus crossed the reef?
No, Chris, I don't. Why?
To get to the other tide. Goodbye, folks.